the way we think about death and mourning in American culture has changed over the years. We've heard from guests on this show who have pointed toward a growing distance between death and our lives with the rise of a funeral industry that handles what was once done in people's homes.
Our next guest says there's another change going on, new ways of remembering and mourning loved ones after they pass away, from roadside memorials to online tributes and beyond.
Candy Can joins us now. She's assistant professor of religion at Baylor University. Her newest book is Virtual Afterlives, Grieving the Dead in the 21st Century. Candy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob and Veronica. Nice to talk with you.
Well, at the root of the different kinds of memorials that we're going to talk about, you say that we have marginalized grief in our culture. How so?
Well, I believe that a lot of people aren't able to grieve. First of all, we're not given the time to grieve in our workplaces. Usually, if people take bereavement leave, they're given maybe 3 days at most to actually arrange the funeral, attend the funeral, and then put the estate in order. And that's really for salaried employees. Hourly employees don't even get that time. And so I think that there's a lot of marginalized grievers in the sense, first, that they don't have the time to grieve. But second, people just aren't allowed to talk about their grief, particularly for taboo deaths such as babies or children who die, or even for things like close friends or same-sex spouses. There's just not a lot of space within our society to allow people to grieve. And so that's what I call marginalized grieving.
And it hasn't always been that way. You write about a time where we were kind of in a separate state. We were allowed to be in grief world for a while.
Yeah, and in the Victorian time particularly, you were expected to wear mourning clothing. You remember Gone with the Wind, for example. Scarlett, the main character, is frustrated because she's still forced to wear mourning clothing and not partake in any of the dances or the balls. So there's a negative aspect to it in that people were forced to grieve and kind of sit on the sidelines. But the positive aspect to it was that they were universally and socially recognized as being in bereavement. Whereas today, people don't even wear black armbands. They don't wear grieving clothing. They're expected to return to work quickly to, quote-unquote, work through their grief, to, quote-unquote, move through their grief. So, yeah, I would definitely say there was a very different time and period where people were not only allowed to grieve, but expected to grieve.
And most of your book is about the ways that people are kind of making it up as they go. We're improvising to find the time and space to grieve. Are we doing that because we don't have that acknowledged time off, that acknowledged ability to talk about these things?
I think so, Rob. And I think that people just, you see the movement for the do-it-yourself funerals. And I think these do-it-yourself bereavement rituals are along the same lines, that people just need to create their own mourning rituals because they may or may not have a place to do it.
Well, let's start getting into some of the examples you're talking about in your book. One is the ghost bike. You say it's an example of a bodiless memorial. First, for people who haven't seen those or maybe seen them and didn't know what they are, what is a ghost bike?
Okay, ghost bikes first emerged a few years ago. They really were created for a couple of reasons. One was to warn other bike riders, pedestrians, car drivers about the dangers of riding on their bikes, and to kind of create a new discourse. You'll notice that a lot of newspaper articles about biking accidents, they tend to blame the bike rider as opposed to the car driver for the accident. So they were created partly to create more awareness for the bike riders. And so they're basically bikes. They're usually not actually the bike that was hit when the person died, but they're usually secondhand bikes bought at thrift shops, and then they're painted white, so they resemble a ghost, and then they're placed at the intersection or the street corner where the person was killed in the accident. And usually the accident involved a car or a truck hitting a bike rider and killing them. But it's really interesting because I think that the ghost bikes, they kind of startle you. You're walking along in your neighborhood, and all of a sudden you see this bike, and there's a name with the birth date and the death date. And it's a symbol to me of a kind of growing trend of memorialization that's taking place at the site of death as opposed to the site of where the body is located. So that's where I talk about it as a bodiless memorial. We tend to really memorialize where people die now, kind of like the roadside memorials that many of you have probably seen if you haven't seen Ghost Bike. So we tend to memorialize at the site of death as opposed to the actual place where the body is buried.
And that's a recurring theme in your book. The body itself isn't necessarily as important a part of the ritual as it used to be when the body might be in your house.
Right. Before, people would die in their home. Now it's the whole process of dying and death is removed from us. And most deaths occur in the hospital. And then from there, they go on to the funeral home where they're embalmed. And we often don't even see the dead body in its natural form. And I think this is problematic because I think part of the problem with that is that then we're not comfortable with death. We don't talk about death. And then you compound that with the lack of time for grieving and bereavement. And you really created a vacuum where nobody can really talk about these deaths and grieve together. And there's no space for people that are mourning.
And another type of memorial you talk about, a little more high-tech than the ghost bike, a growing trend of social media memorials. So what kind of things are we seeing?
Well, I'm sure you've all seen this on Facebook. When someone dies now, it's common practice to post a picture of someone that has died. Sometimes people will post a picture of the deceased in a better time when they were happy and doing well. Oftentimes, though, now people will post on their profile picture. They'll replace their profile picture with a picture of them with the deceased. And this is kind of a self-identifying marker of I am actually grieving. So it's, to me, it's a contemporary version of the black armband. It's kind of this declaration to the virtual world that I am grieving for this person who has died, and I had close ties with that person. One of my students said to me, and I thought it was really interesting, she said, if my neighbor dies, I wouldn't feel comfortable going to the funeral, but I would probably feel comfortable posting on a Facebook page. So we're seeing a real shift here in people posting on their Facebook pages, also with Twitter. This is another real shift. I think you've heard about Scott Simon posting about his mother dying, and that really got a lot of press. When Nelson Mandela died, we saw just millions and millions of tweets after his death. When the Boston Marathon bombing happened, there were 27 million tweets following that. When Margaret Thatcher died, over a million tweets in 4 hours. So we're definitely seeing a shift to a kind of social and communal remembrance and memorialization of people who have died on social media.
One point there that I wanted to key in on, you said a social media post is one way of announcing almost your status as someone in the process of grieving, because we don't all usually have that. How important is it for someone to mark that status?
Well, I think it's especially important when you're not allowed to grieve openly in other places, when we're expected to return to work so quickly. I think that people need a place where they can go repeatedly and kind of talk about their feelings and have a kind of safe space where they can deal with and process through their grief. And so I definitely think that the kind of announcing of one status. The other thing, you know, although social spheres and social statuses and social networks are all overlapping now with our workplaces and our other places, but it's one place to kind of let the world know I'm having a hard time. I may be back at work, but my mind is on my friend who died, my cousin who died, my uncle who died, all of these people that are not necessarily in the category of quote-unquote family that we're allowed to take time off from work to grieve for and to process the death of.
And another point you make in your book on a related theme is that the grieving period isn't just about remembering the dead and making, you know, all the necessary arrangements. It's also about figuring out how to live in a world without that person, a world with the gap that they've left behind. Is what people are doing social media a way to start negotiating that, talking about that, thinking out loud about it?
Oh, definitely. I definitely think so. Because, I mean, take Newtown, for example, where, you know, all of these children were killed, and then 2 weeks later, the residents of Newtown, Connecticut, were told to move all of these memorial objects that they were spilling out onto the streets and getting in the way of traffic. But how do you tell a town that's just lost an entire group of its children, its future, to after 2 weeks that it's time to move forward and to start healing? I just think the language we use is really indicative of our society, that we're so future-oriented, and rather than really kind of taking the time to process our losses. And for me, death is something that we need to talk about, because it's how we really come to appreciate life. It's how we come to value our lives and to really live fully and richly.
We're talking to Candy Can. She's a religion professor at Baylor University, talking about the rise of new ways of remembering loved ones who have passed away. Her new book is Virtual Afterlives, Grieving the Dead in the 21st Century.
We continue our conversation now with religion professor Candy Can, talking about the changing way we mourn and remember loved ones, from tattoos and T-shirts to websites and roadside memorials. Her new book is called Virtual Afterlives, Grieving the Dead in the 21st Century.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have we marginalized, ignored grief in the mourning process in our country? And have you done a memorial like the one she's talking about, a social media webpage for someone who's passed away, a roadside memorial, a tattoo for a relative you've lost, or maybe a comrade at arms? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or email talk@wpr.org. We'll get your calls in just a moment. But Candy, first, I wanted to ask about the rise of the tattoo memorial. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, tattoo memorials have become really popular lately, and they tend to be the first memorials tend to be the first tattoos that a lot of young people are getting nowadays, and they tend to be for the first loss, which is generally a grandparent. That tends to be the first memorial tattoo that young people get. But I have to say, they also, there are tattoos for premature babies that have died, stillborn babies. There are tattoos for military people who have lost comrades in wars. I mean, there's all kinds of memorial tattoos. And it was really interesting. I love doing my interviews with the tattoo artists, because I really see them as a kind of modern-day shaman or priest, because they really care about helping the people that they're inking these tattoos on. And they really care about giving them a memorial that will give them meaning and help them process the death.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Steele on the line in Appleton. Steele, hi. You're on the air.
Yes. Your guest just talked about tattoos. I'd like to jump on to that one. My father ended up as an MIA in 1972, and woman started running my mother maybe in the 80s, and she wore his MIA bracelet, and she came up to visit my mother, and I was here too, and she lives near Oklahoma. And so she had a tattoo of the bracelet, and then I just saw her this summer, and I sent her a bunch of photos because she wanted to get a tattoo of my father's face on her arm, and it's the most beautiful thing I ever saw.
Wow. Steele, thanks for the call. And Candy, you have pictures of people having pictures of comrades or friends or relatives' faces tattooed as one of the forms of the memorial tattoo.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story that you just shared. I'm so glad that you really like the tattoo, Neil. The portrait tattoo is actually a very common tattoo. And also for babies or children, often people will get the footprints or the handprint of the baby tattooed on them, which is a really interesting kind of imprint of life and death at the same time on someone else's body. I think they're absolutely beautiful tributes.
Thanks for the call. We'll go now to Abigail in Elk Mound. Hi, Abigail. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
About the social media and the grieving. My mom passed away in March, and my sisters and I and my stepdad have made a Facebook page for her. And it's really nice because people are sharing older photos of mom, you know, before we were even born. So it's kind of nice to see some of that. However, the issue we have is that now it's basically turned into a breeding ground for anger and bad feelings because everyone's demanding all mom used to have it.
We're losing your connection, Abigail, but Candy, I don't know how much of that you caught. She and her sister are doing a social media page for their mom, and sorry about your loss, by the way, Abigail, and trying to figure out how to manage that. We're making this up as we go, aren't we, Candy?
Yes, and it's really interesting. Abigail brought up a really important point about these social media grieving sites, because one of the things I really like about them is they do democratize mourning. So they don't necessarily privilege the immediate family. They allow everyone to jump in and talk about their loss. The problem with that, though, is that that can be upsetting sometimes, because then the immediate family no longer has control over the memories and that are shared. And they no longer are able to control exactly what's public, what's private. So this is the negative or the downside to this democratization process. But I interviewed one widow, and she was upset because she said that everyone posted on her husband's Facebook page rather than writing her. So she felt like her position as the primary griever had been kind of usurped or turned over.
Wow, this is going to take a long time to figure out just the etiquette of grieving online.
Exactly. And I think, you know, it's still being ironed out. And one of the things that's really interesting, though, is a lot of this is being determined by the end user framework. So the actual programs themselves are partly determining these rituals. So the posting of a picture, for example, and for tweets, you know, you can only do 140 characters. So we're starting to see certain phrases popping up as mourning phrases. Now, I absolutely agree with you. The etiquette of social network grieving is something that's still being determined.
Abigail, thanks for the call. We go to Josie in Wauwatosa now. Josie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to speak to the fact that posting something on the internet is not enough. People still need to acknowledge a person's loss in person.
Josie, thanks for the call. So not enough to just do something online, she says. Candy, are people upset that we're having this sort of distant online memorialization instead of having that personal contact?
Yeah, again, this is the problem, right? The upside is that you can grieve anywhere. You can send a message from your iPhone. You can network yourself into the funeral without having to be there. The problem is there's a loss of presence. There's nothing, in my opinion, that replaces presence.
But the reality is, as you point out in the book, that most company policies don't allow you time off for even a funeral unless you're very closely related to someone. Is that networked presence better than nothing if you can't make it to the real thing?
I think so, but the downside is I think then you see it replacing presence. And I think, as Josie pointed out, it can be very upsetting and disturbing when rather than visiting the gravesite or attending the funeral, people just kind of loop themselves in virtually. The upside, of course, is that now you can light a candle for your loved one from anywhere. You can send a teddy bear and place it on the grave from anywhere. So, yeah, I definitely think there are both positive and negative trends to memorialization on the internet.
And one thing we haven't gotten into, less permanent than the tattoo, people making memorial T-shirts or having memorial bumper stickers on their car. Is that really something we're seeing more of?
I definitely think we're seeing more of the car decal memorials, and we are seeing the T-shirts. They tend to be in the borderlands, and I'm not sure why that is. I think there needs to be further research on that. But what I love about both the cars and the T-shirt is that you can move in and out of your status. So you can drive your car to work with your status proclaimed on your car. You can wear your T-shirt when you get home from work your deceased grandma or your best friend. And you can walk around with your friend wearing your mourning T-shirt. And then when you have to go back to work, you get dressed in your work clothes or you leave your car, and then you're kind of back to normal, so to speak. Yeah, I really like the transience of these kind of memorials. They're very different, and I see them as kind of in between the actual physical material memorial and the social network memorial that you find on the internet.
Briefly, Candy, earlier you mentioned the old black armband. Is it time to just bring those back?
I think so. Although, you know, when you track tweets like for Nelson Mandela and you see how many people respond to Margaret Thatcher's death, I think you begin to realize there actually is this communal remembrance, and it's occurring online. We're not necessarily seeing it because people aren't walking around with the armband, but it's definitely there. Oh, I definitely agree, Rob. I think it'd be great to bring back at least talk of mourning. I think it'd be really healthy if we could discuss bereavement in a public place and if people were comfortable with it.
Well, Candy, thank you for joining us and starting that discussion.
Thank you very much, Rob and Veronica. It was nice to be with you today.
That was Candy Can. She's assistant professor of religion at Baylor University. Her newest book is Virtual Afterlives, Grieving the Dead in the 21st Century.